Tis Friday.
Tis Friday.
And, you know what Friday is.
We know what day that is.
It's like the opposite of the Lord's Day. If Sunday is for Christians, the Lord's Day, then Friday is the devil's day, for it is Fascism Friday.
Always with an English accent.
Well, I don't know. So. Was that even in English? I'm pretty sure any Brits watching or anyone who's Brit adjacent is like, what the hell was that?
Well, that was the Americanized version of a British accent.
I liked it. It's an old English accent. No one knows what that sounded like.
You know what I just realized, actually, while I was sitting here looking at your gorgeous artwork, is that episode 200 is going to land on a Fascism Friday.
I know. It seems fitting.
Which, yeah. Well, we planned that out last June. That it would work that way.
Yeah, because we're always one step ahead. We're playing four-dimensional chess. Not even three-dimensional. Four, which is the end of time. Well, it's fitting we're talking about fascism because, you know, what's the Orwell quote? Fascism is capitalism plus murder. Isn't that I think that's an Orwell quote, which... I mean, I think capitalism has murder in it already. You don't have to add it.
We should probably introduce ourselves full gung-ho.
Maybe there's some newbie who doesn't know who we are. I'm Mark Van Steenhoek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
Good morning, CK. Happy Fascism Friday.
Yes, which seems like what is that, an oxymoron or one of those paradoxical?
Maybe it's things. Like Good Friday, where it's like it's kind of good, but it feels kind of shitty.
Oh, so Gus has an idea of what the accent is.
That was some Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. Oh my gosh, that's the classic bad British accent. Thank you. I will gladly be in the same lofty terrain as that my fellow Dutchman Dick Van Dyke. Without capping.
There we go.
I just want to connect the dots. You know, fascism, we've talked about a lot before, but capitalism, we're talking about how we internalize it and the way it kind of produces overconsumption. But often, like, we buy into this idea that our lives are supposed to look a certain way under capitalism. It's part of the lie. It's a lie to obscure the fact that the few get a lot of the resources over and against the many. So you end up with a lot of people who are pissed off and want some of the blame. And that's where fascism comes in. And it's like a little bit of a bait and switch says, blame these immigrants over here or these Jews. And so fascism comes from the anxiety in part that is produced by us not knowing the truth about capitalism. And capitalism is a rot. I mean, it rots our insides, but also rots our world, which we're going to talk a little bit about both of those things and how they work together today, which is not fun to talk about, but we can do something about it. It's kind of that's the silver lining of everything we talk about, even when we're glum, is there are things we can do about it.
Yeah. And a lot of that thing to do about it really, and this is why we're always connecting back to spirituality and spiritual practice, because a lot of it has to do with, how do we work with all of these internalized structures that have been given to us, sort of force fed to us, mostly, you know, when we're kids, and then are constantly reinforced, right? Every time we, you know, see a Visa commercial that tells us we can live our best life if only we go into credit card debt, that just reinforces all of those ideas. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that one of the places that we wanted to start today is with this spirit of consumption, right? Because that's one of the ways that that people talk about capitalism. And a friend of mine who I really also consider to be one of my spiritual teachers is this Native woman in northern Minnesota who you know, who's got a real kind of potty mouth. That's a lot of fun because I do. I have one too. And
what? You know, and that's how uncouth of you.
Yes, uncouth of me. You know, and the way she put it in one of our recent conversations, she said, you know, our plan as natives 500 years ago was not to be, you know, spending our whole lives sucking wendigo dick. That wasn't the plan. And I mean, what she means by that, so the wendigo is this native image of this kind of spirit of consumption and the spirit of destruction, right? And that, you know, as white people arrived here to colonize and to take over, you know, they brought with them this endless spirit of consumption. And I thought about this again, you know, you posted this little meme the other day, right? That under capitalism, a forest has no value until it's cut down.
Right. Unless it's a tourist attraction, I guess.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there are a few other ways that we can try to make money off of it.
That's the predominant way that wealth is extracted from the land is through taking it away.
Through destruction. Yeah. And consumption. Yeah. And so this spirit of I don't have enough, I need more, I need to get more and more and more and more, right? That is very much spiritually what's at the heart of this entire capitalist enterprise, right? So that, you know, whatever amount of money I have in the bank, I need more. Whatever amount of market share I have with my company, I need more. Whatever, you know, and so there's this endless drive to consume. Mm-hmm. And the notion that I could not need more, right, is actually, you know, we talked about this a lot on Wednesday, is actually sort of moralized as bad. Which is really kind of fascinating when you think about it, right? That I could actually be, you know, satisfied and therefore say, well, you know, I have X. I don't have to endlessly do more and be anxious about it. Like, that is seen as morally bad, moral failure.
You lazy shit.
Exactly.
Well, this creates a weird social cycle, psychosocial like feedback loop. So we might be tempted to feel content because we'll watch a movie and see the rich man on the deathbed saying, oh, I only wish that I had spent more time with my family. And we think, I want to live that life. Right. But then we're bombarded with these external messages to consume more. And then even the destruction that we like, meanwhile, our whole economy, we've talked about this before, is based upon continual consumption. Like the Dow Jones being flat is a bad thing. What you think about that? Right. That's being this same or down would be sustainable, but it has to go up. And if it doesn't go up, consumers are to blame because consumer confidence is low. And then we're bombarded again with messaging. And then the negative, the deleterious effects, if you will, of our overconsumption. We're the ones who are blamed entirely, like not anything in the system, not the corporations. Right. And we've, you know, there's all sorts of documentaries about how plastic manufacturers paid for the Ad Council ad with the teary Native American, which was a big ad in the 70s, telling us we need to recycle instead of them being responsible. And so it's this feedback loop of overconsumption. Wendigo is a good way to talk about it. And, you know, for those who want to read a book, Jack Forbes's book, Columbus and Other Wendigos, I think that's what it's called. I mean, it's a great imagery of what it means to be kind of the white capitalist way of seeing the world. And we get sucked into it. And if we don't fall in line, we are shamed and prodded and propagandized to until we fall in line. It's no wonder that we are all feeling anxious and ever consuming more and feeling bad about it at the same time. That's what they want us to feel like.
Yeah. So we've got a few comments coming in and
other people saying good morning. Gus says, sure, you can't have a fascism if there's enough. Can you even imagine a post-scarcity version of fascism? I'm trying. No, not for very long. Susan writes, OMG, Dan. So true. Lazy, no goals, undesirable employee material. Is there ever a point we can rest or at least just maintain? This is where it's like, think about how bizarre that it is that resting is a form of resistance. Like, you know, Walter Brueggemann wrote a book about Sabbath as resistance. The fact that doing nothing is a type of resistance is kind of astonishing if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, this is a great question, Susan. And this kind of gets to one of the other things I was thinking about for today and talking about, which, you know, is the model of ecosystems and balance. Right. So if you think about ecosystems, now ecosystems do evolve over time. But one of the things that's talked about in ecosystems and is observed is that ecosystems do get to a point where they are at equilibrium. Right. And so, you know, and sometimes, for example, you know, certain forest ecosystems, I mean, certainly ocean ecosystem, many of, you know, really large other bodies of water, or the savanna as an ecosystem. And the fact is that at that point, there is enough life generating activity that is always recycling, right? So that's a big part of the ecosystem. There is natural recycling. That the ecosystem sort of rests, and it rests in the midst of all of this activity. And again, that's something that is not possible in a constant consumption excretion economy where there is not that kind of stability and recycling. Right. So yeah, I think that that what you see in the rest of the natural order, and again, if we think about human history on a very big scale, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what human beings were doing for tens of thousands of years, right? Is, you know, and I know that I've mentioned this before at different times, right? We talk about, you know, this observation that if you look at the 16th and 17th century, and you look at what life was like in Western Europe versus what life was like in indigenous North America, the indigenous North Americans had a far higher standard of living in a balanced ecosystem kind of economy. So that's what it looks like. And the problem is that when you always have to extract more and more and more, you never get to that balance. Mm-hmm. So
this is a big comment. And just a reminder, this got Klaus's comment got clipped off. Anything over a certain length, I can't tell you exactly how much, will get cut off and we won't see the end of it. So try to break it into pieces if you can. Okay, definitely not true, with all due respect. Moreover, and mainly, things can be better regulated under capitalism. Well, yes, they could be better regulated. I'm not going to disagree with that. Let us call things by the names they have. Okay. Capitalism is an economic mode of production. That's not all it is. The state and how it acts is a different thing. No. And by the way, it usually works in favor of that economic mode of production. 2008-09 is already a part of a history in order to tell us. Just to give examples, some dose of reality is important. It goes on. I agree that we can talk about these as different definitions of things, but that doesn't make them different things. I mean, we can get into all sorts of stuff about, like, you know, Marx says the state naturally comes about under capitalism in order for the people who have access more to defend their capital. So we could define those things separately, but they interweave. And the reason why I don't like defining them separately is almost always someone will come up and say, on paper, capitalism is non-coercive and non-oppressive. And the only reason it has been through all of history is because of this nasty government business. And I'm like, that's a dishonest telling to me. But
yeah, I mean, honestly, Klaus, I'm having a hard time sort of connecting your sentences And so I think there's something there about how the state is bad and capitalism is better.
So it's hard to say.
I think there's something there. I'm not really sure, but this to me is, you know, is one of the classic things that we're sort of brainwashed into refusing to acknowledge, right? Which is that the state becomes a coercive agent for capital. Mm-hmm. You know, mostly through raising an army, right? But two, the state also provides all sorts of goods and services that that the capitalists don't have to pay for, mm-hmm. right? And so that so those don't get included in the costs. And so if you look at things like, roads, infrastructure, electricity, all kinds of transportation, other transportation things, all of these, you know, the fact that one of the groups of employees that is the biggest consumer of food stamps are Walmart employees, right? I mean, this to me is one of the most obvious examples, right? And so Walmart is literally not paying to feed its employees because there is a state program that can keep them sort of fed so that Walmart can keep its wages lower. Mm-hmm. And the Walton family is, you know, the richest family in the world. So this notion that the state and capital are somehow these separate entities is just factually incorrect.
I mean, it's all part of a similar system, so we can define them differently for the purposes of analysis. And I agree, mm-hmm. like, obviously Scandinavian countries regulate their economy more than the United States, and there's mm-hmm. benefits to that. So mm-hmm. maybe you're going that direction, that maybe the ideal is for a super well-regulated something like Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. Then the question becomes, like, if then the state is working on behalf of the people, democratically, to restrain capital, at some point, if it's restrained enough and regulated enough, it stops being capitalism. I mean, that's kind of Marx's point, is of the dictatorship of the proletariat, is if the people actually have democracy, then they will actually gain the means of production, because then there won't be this unequal distribution of wealth. So there's some definitional stuff in there. I'm not going to mm-hmm. argue too much that regulation can be good. But there's something intrinsic about capitalism and ownership of land and labor that will inevitably lead where it's led. I mean, that's what we're
yeah, talking. and this is also where this where the spiritual piece comes in, because it's not that this is the only problematic system in human history, right? That's also not what we're talking about. We're talking about this a lot because this is the system that living in, right? Mm-hmm. If we were living in feudal times, we would be talking about the issues related to feudalism a lot more, but we're not living in that time. So it's interesting historically, but it's less interesting practically. So with every system, the problem always comes with this spirit of domination, power over endless consumption, right? And so, you know, the spirit that creeps in of, I want more and more and more. I mean, biblically, right, it's the Tower of Babel story, you know? So I want to, you know, build my tower up to God. And I'm going to just marshal all the resources and oppress people and do all the stuff so that I can become God. And that is the spirit behind all of these imperialized systems. And so that's why it's so important for us to work with that in ourselves and in our communities, because, yeah, I mean, it is true that it doesn't matter what the system is. If that's the spirit that is leading the system, that is always going to become a problem.
Yeah. More comments coming in. William writes, we need more rage and more sublime madness. Sublime madness could be a really good
like, I like that.
I don't know, grunge band from the mid-90s, maybe. This is no time to rest. There are apocalyptic times. These are apocalyptic times, and we must stand against the greatest Goliath imaginable.
I love that. Very poetic. Thank you.
Susan writes, yes, I love this ecosystem talk, negative feedback loop. Alan writes, for this reason, resting is resistance. I dislike the song, Those Who Believe in Freedom Cannot Rest. Theodosius writes, things can be better regulated in capitalism. Just how? Remember, whatever wealth the rich have has been stolen from the poor.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I saw a great comment on this the other day. Like, somebody was saying, well, if I had as much money as Jeff Bezos had, like, I would just be running around fixing all the problems. You know, child poverty, gone, this, gone, that, gone. And of course, you know, that sounds great. But the problem is, the reason somebody has gotten that wealthy is because they don't have any problem with extracting from people in the earth to create all those problems, right? So that's the thing, is the people that would actually want to fix those problems would never become that wealthy. And so that's the reason why the charity model of gracious billionaires does not work.
Doesn't really do much to change the system at all. CK writes, how long do you two think they can keep this kind of capitalist system going until it collapses? I think it's already collapsing. I mean, we're going to have a long collapse rather than a sudden one, probably, in a lot of ways. And we're already seeing ecological collapse.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we mentioned on this show, but I think it was originally a book, and then the guy turned it into an interesting, like, natural history museum exhibition called Collapse. Where he looked at the collapse of different historic civilizations and empires. I think he looked at like the Mayans and
is that
the
Jared
Shinto dynasty. Yeah, I think that's the guy's name. As I said, I didn't read the book. I saw the museum exhibition. You know, what he comes to in studying all of this is that what causes the collapse ultimately is ecological collapse. That the imperial systems become so extractive that, you know, the food sources end up drying up and, you know, various bad ecological crises come and the empires can't sustain themselves. And so, you know, clearly we're in the midst of that, except at this point it's global. There's nowhere to go. So, so what that looks like, obviously there have been tons of sci-fi kind of stories about, you know, what happens when the electric grid goes down and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know.
Well, and then we get, you know, people like Elon Musk wanting to colonize Mars. And that's because we could fix this one. But if your goal is to continue to consume resources, you have to look for more resources in our system. Which, by the way, they think they may have found fungi on Mars. Did you hear about
that? Oh, really? No.
They have pictures. They can't prove it yet. It could be something else, okay. But they think that there's a good chance that there's fungal life on Mars, which is fascinating.
Okay. So you could go to Mars and get athlete's foot.
Or get high. So licking Mars rocks, man. Margaret writes, Klaus Raup, I agree. I would identify as a social democrat but not a socialist. I think what's being discussed here is unfettered capitalism, and in the US we are emerging from an era of powerful forces advocating deregulation as the means to improving everyone's life. I mean, we're talking about capitalism in general, but yes, I mean, I want to underscore, I would rather have Sweden or Norway's type of capitalism than what we have in the United States. Definitely would rather have social democrat states rather than whatever it is we have, right-leaning ones.
And, you know, one of the things that is an element of those states, right, is not just regulation on capital activity, but again, it's this sense of, you know, we can rest and we can stop. right? So, you know, we can take a vacation. We don't have to, you know, work 20 hours a day. There becomes this internalized sense of, yeah, it's okay to just kind of stop and hang out. And that's just something that is not part of our ethos at all. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I forget the exact statistic, but I mean, the number of unused vacation days in the American workforce is staggering. It's like hundreds of years worth of untaken vacation.
Yeah. And that happens in a system that makes you feel like you are obligated to make your employer happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that somehow it's merit to you. It's like good morals for you to work hard and not take a break. Darren writes, is the future of regenerative human settlements necessarily in the places that empire abandons? Or can alternative economies be viable for self-organizing people without capital in urban centers? Mm. I mean, that's a huge question, Darren.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And historically, that has the first part has often been the case, right? That so, you know, empires collapse and they kind of abandon certain areas, you know, they pull back from places they've colonized and something new starts. I mean, the Christian monastic movement, that's how that began, right? As the Roman Empire was collapsing, there were these abandoned places in northern Italy. And people, you know, started creating these little communities. You know, and we're certainly seeing some of that, for example, in Detroit, right? I mean, Detroit is a great example of how capitalism just doesn't care about community and basically allowed an entire city to sink into this post-apocalyptic kind of hell realm. And, you know, and a lot of people now are sort of moving into these abandoned places and creating something new. And so, yeah, I mean, certainly places that are given up on are nice spaces for trying something new, for sure.
It's definitely, I mean, you have more access to things that are easier to work with than trying to do stuff within, like, you know, a great example is, you know, San Francisco or even Minneapolis now. Property values are going up. So if you don't have capital, it's hard to even live here,
yeah.
Let alone organize. It's not impossible. I mean, people are organizing all the time and trying to create structures of dual power, which is an idea of like creating an alternative system to rival established systems, like mutual aid and things like that, but it's harder. But I think we have to kind of work with where we're at and what we have to work with. Because a lot of people, if you have no capital, it's not like we can run off to the woods and like, because that stuff's still capital, like owned too. So it's, you got to work with where you're at. And that's a big question that I wish we had more time to really dive into more. Mm-hmm. Susan writes, if you say the state is bad and capitalism better is better, then what? Libertarian political system? Two words, Ayn Rand, horrid philosophy. Yeah.
Good old
I'm not sure that's what Klaus was advocating. I couldn't tell if he was advocating that or advocating more of a Scandinavian style social democracy. Ellen writes, is things can be better regulated under capitalism? My emphasis is supposed to mean capitalism could be better than they are right now, or capitalism is better than any other organization, structure, tendency. I mean, that's usually what ends up happening. Like, I think what we have now could become better. I don't think this is the best system, but part of the lie that we are indoctrinated into thinking is that this is the end of history. Capitalism is the best system the world has ever been able to produce. Therefore, we just have to make this better, and any talk of anything else is stupid. I mean, that's kind of the message. That's why anytime I say capitalism bad, they're like, would you rather be killed by Lenin in the face? I'm like, oh, well, why'd you go there? But that's how it always goes, because we can't even imagine an alternative. Well, I mean, there's that Ursula Le Guin quote. I wish I knew it off the top of my head, but people used to think that the divine rights of kings would last forever, and it didn't. Capitalism won't last forever. Mm-hmm. That's a good way of thinking. Aaron writes, the spirit of consumption. Capitalism is also alive in other forms of government and philosophies. Nitpicking definitions misses the point of the spiritual deficit that is consumption.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things we've been talking about. I'm not sure that the issue is nitpicking definitions. I think definitions are important. And I think it's also important to recognize that, yeah, I mean, this spirit of the will to power and consume is present in all human systems, and it's present in humanity. And yeah, that's the we have to be getting at that. And if that's not changed, then yeah, switching out the system after time is not going to make much difference.
Yeah. Some systems bake in some bad tendencies. It's like, you know, humanity is messy. So we have competing interests all the time, and we have to examine them and try to build off of our better instincts rather than some of these worse ones. And then we have to tell all these myths and lies and build systems and oppress people and use weapons in order to maintain a system that's bad for people, which is what we have now.
DG, all right. Well, we're at time. We got a lot of comments, so we're going to have to do our rolling through, which we're not very good at.
But William says, anyone defending capitalism either doesn't understand what it is and what the role is in it, or they are an employer owner, or they are under the delusion that they will one day be an employer owner themselves. There's some truth in that. I don't know if that's 100% true, but I generally agree with that sentiment that you're either duped or you have a vested interest, is what I'm hearing you say. God hates cops, says. Have you guys considered Leninism? Anarchism has
never changed. Is that your given name?
Hates must be the middle name.
Yeah.
Have you guys considered Leninism? Anarchism has never achieved anything anywhere, while socialism has already doubled life expectancy for one-fifth of the world. I'm not going to get into an anarchism, Marxist-Leninist pissing contest. So I've read...
Especially when we're over time.
Yeah. I am not a fan of Stalinism. I'll put it that way. I'm not a tanky. Gus writes, sports stadiums is another of the quintessential examples of U.S. government subsidizing capital. They give away the means to make a metric shit ton of money. Why doesn't that money go back into the public coffers for public good? That's a great example of the way that government and capitalism collude.
And Minneapolis is ground zero for that $450 million into the new stadium.
Which is called U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yes.
Yeah. Endless consumption is unsustainable from an ecological perspective. It only flies because external costs are not factored in, for sure. We don't really pay for the actual cost of things. People don't often get that. People are not aware what this economic system is really costing us. Think about what happens when gas prices are low. Everyone gets excited, especially if it happens under a Democrat president. They're like, look, we're winning the economy. We're better than Republic. That kind of thing. I'm like, we're not paying the actual cost for gas when we pay for gas. And low prices are not necessarily a good thing. Bert says, nobody has any business having such a disproportionate say in how our collective resources are allocated. Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, amen. Absolutely.
Collapse is also a documentary, Alan says.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Great. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Shell writes, discussion fits nicely with reading The Great Work by Thomas Berry.
Yeah, Thomas Berry, all of his work really advocates a much more ecological response and relationship in human society. Yeah, for sure.
Gladys writes, a good morning. Please connect to the prophets, Isaiah 5, Ezekiel, Hosea, and others. I mean, the prophets have a lot to say about the way that empires treat the earth.
Empires treat the poor.
Cutting down the cedars of Lebanon, the exploitation, oppression. A lot of that stuff is in the prophets, and people don't realize that they talk about a lot of these sorts of things. CK writes, would it be a logical conclusion to say the longer capitalism continues, the more fascist systems will become?
Yeah.
Generally, the more difficult it is for capitalism to function casually, I guess I could say, the more it feels threatened, the more it'll become fascistic.
we are dealing with this now. I mean, we're in kind of this lull period, but in 6 months, when the 2022 elections start ramping up, I mean, the threat of a fascist takeover of the American government has not gone away. Mm-hmm. It has not gone away. And we're going to be right back in the throes of that really soon.
God Hates Cops says, social democracy is the left wing of fascism. Social democracy is fueled by imperialism. It's the leftmost edge of right-wing politics, the furthest left you can go without abandoning capitalism. The purpose of social democracy is to prevent revolution. Study Weimar. There's so much in there that we could engage in. I don't think it's fair to call it left-wing of fascism, because I would call fascism the right-wing of capitalism, but I generally agree that it's there to kind of like soften the blow, but it's still intrinsically, I don't think we could have these sorts of capitalist systems, even social democracy, without a history of colonization and exploitation. So I agree with the general premise.
Well, and certainly this, you know, fueled by imperialism. I mean, Norway is living this great life because they have been able to extract oil from the North Sea and save up a shit ton of money. And so obviously that is deeply connected to the entire capitalist global world order. I mean, it's and I think that oftentimes we want to ignore that, and we want to ignore, for example, what happens in those countries when there's immigrant influx and suddenly you have this like fascist parties appearing all over the place. And so it looks good as long as it's not too impacted by a lot of other stuff.
If you look at it in isolation,
but
we don't live in isolation. So yes, the resources they get are more equitably distributed amongst their people,
amongst themselves,
which that is better than not that. Gladys writes, the need to rest is embedded in the practice of Sabbath and idealized in the Jubilee offered in Leviticus. Yes, Jubilee, we talked about that before. It's a very subversive idea that fundamentalist Bible readers don't like to look at. Susan writes, boy, not me. I use my vacay time. I'm too old for that time.
Amen. All right, Susan. Susan uses her vacation time.
Yeah, I would always use mine up, and I'd also use my sick days strategically also. Ed writes, the ideal are the democratically run co-ops, in my opinion, but that takes a good democratic government. God Hates Cops. The first question is not how we would organize society after revolution. The first question is how do you overthrow the capitalist state and how do you defend the revolution from reaction? If we don't hammer that out, the rest is meaningless speculation. I mean, there's so much.
You've got to keep going, Mark.
Ed writes, we will have to have a true global revolution of values away from accumulation and consumerism. Otherwise, we are fucked. Susan writes, what about the difference between a transactional and relational economy? Oh, yeah. There's so much stuff coming up, guys. Relating as in having a sense of connection to others, the earth, its resources. Yes, yes, yes. GHC writes, typical Western anarcho-liberals who only support safety impotent strategies and only support revolutions that failed. Abandon your liberal idealism. Okay, you're just sounding like a comic book character of a Marxist. Anyways, Jim writes, no, it's not going away. CK writes, a century of self is a great documentary to watch without capitalism. Yes, Century of Self is a great, that's an Adam Curtis documentary. That's really fascinating. Ellen writes, do you know today is one of the times Facebook is trying to make money off you with their SendStar system? I did not know that. And final word from Catherine. Yes. I like when
Catherine's coming in.
History note, Norwegians did create their social economy pre-oil, but we're seeing now how their system is vulnerable to far-right movements.
And there we go.
There we go.
And Catherine could have said that comment in Norwegian.
That's true.
Which is doubly awesome. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot. It was great having everybody here. And we will be back next week with a topic heretofore not determined.
Maybe we'll talk about anarcho-liberalism. Is that what? Is that what we're? I don't
know. We'll see.
See y'all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.